Okay. Our next speaker is Judy Rebeck here.
Well, I guess I want to start by talking about what Nicole just said, because I think this is an important part of how the state cracks down on resistors, people who first they go after the radicals. And if the people who are more in the center, the progressive people who have standing in the community, turn on those radicals, then we're risking our rights even more. I mean, what I was going to talk about tonight was standing up for our civil rights, standing up for the rights that our ancestors fought for, the right to free speech, the right to organize, the right to assembly. All of these rights are under very severe attack right now in Canada and all over the Western world. And they've been under attack in the South for much, much longer. And I'll talk about that too. And if middle-class people with good jobs and standing in the community turn on the people who are on the radical edge, then you'll be next. It's one of the reasons I'll start with June 15th, because that's where John started, and I had an interesting experience as well on June 15th, because I was working for the CBC at the time, and I went to the demonstration as an observer, because I thought there might be need for an observer, and I was at the barricade, and I watched what happened, and I agree with John that it was a provocation by the police. I've been an activist for a long, long time. And even in the 60s, when the police rode in with horses, I'd never seen such an unprovoked attack on a demonstration. And I've never seen such a violent police attack on a demonstration. Well, not until a few months later in Quebec City. I myself had to jump and run several times not to get beaten with a club. And so did everybody else that was there. And the police basically rode into the crowd with truncheons like this. And horses could have trampled people, and horses did trample people. And yet, and I was one of, I don't know, probably 50 to 60 media people there. And I was the only one at that point. Later in the week, others joined me. But at that point, I was the only one who said that the police provoked the violence. Everyone else blamed OCAP. Well, it was convenient, and John in particular, who gets, you can see what a wild-eyed guy he is, he gets vilified a lot. and there was a reason for that, and that is that, you know, there's a way in which if you stand up to authority in a militant way, you get vilified in this society, that you're supposed to submit to authority. I saw people fight back against the police, but what I saw was people who get the shit kicked out of them every day by the police in back alleys when they're by themselves, deciding to fight back. And I think it was justified. That was my attitude. I don't believe in violence myself. And I think violence begets violence. But what happened that day where people were provoked, they were attacked, and they fought back. It was self-defense. And that's not how any other journalists saw it, because they saw it from a different point of view. They saw it from the point of view of the police, that the police are always right, that the authorities are always right. And we have to challenge that, and we have to speak out against it. Because what's happening in our society now is that the right-wing agenda represented by the Tories, represented by corporate globalization, creates an untenable society. It creates a polarization between rich and poor. It creates a society in which there is tremendous wealth at the same time as there is absolute and abject poverty. I mean, it so happens this year I've traveled quite a bit around the world, and I can tell you nowhere where I was, in Rio de Janeiro, there aren't as many people on the streets as there are in Toronto. And one of the reasons for that is because in Rio de Janeiro, people have built themselves houses on empty land and taken over the land and demanded, not that it's great, but they have favelas and they've built their own houses on empty land, and they've demanded and received, in some cases, services from the state. And so here we have, you know, Toronto, where you have, you know, every three blocks there's another Jaguar dealer. People who have, you know, unbelievable amounts of wealth. At the same time as we have people who are hungry and homeless. Such a situation is untenable without repression, because it's so unjust. And this is true around the world. You know, about 5 or 6 years, no, I guess in 95, I went to a conference in Beijing, and women from the South told us how what was happening was not a reduction in the state. You know, it wasn't just cutbacks in the state. It was a shift in their countries. Structural adjustment created a shift. So the money that used to go into social services were going into police and military budgets, and of course paying the debt. And so what we're seeing, you know, we often have said in the anti-globalization movement that we're seeing a smaller state. We're not seeing a smaller state. What we're seeing is a militarized state. We're seeing a state where more and more money is going into defense spending and military spending, and less into social services. And it's related. It's related, because if you remove a social safety net, if you remove the social safety net, they're replacing it with police. That's what they're doing. And those of us who are not in a situation to be vulnerable today to that have to speak out against it. It's very easy to turn your back, you know, and say, oh, it's John Clark or Jaggi Singh, those guys, you know, they're too radical and they push it too far, and you know, I'm not like that and I don't need to defend that. But, you know, I think it's essential that every progressive-minded person speak out against this criminalization of dissent. Because it started, the first time I noticed it was in Windsor a number of years ago at the OAS meeting, where they had an unbelievable police presence. There was no violence whatsoever at that demonstration. And nevertheless, people were arrested. There was a massive police presence. Then we saw the OCAP march. Then Quebec City, which was stunning in the violence of the police. It was stunning. I mean, more tear gas than, I don't even know where they got all that tear gas. They must have bought all the tear gas on the face of the earth in order to do it. And what these events have done is create a situation where it's normal now to have this massive police presence at demonstrations. Where, you know, what happened at Concordia, for example, when Netanyahu spoke, was one person got mad and broke a window. And this is now a riot. And these people, the person who broke the window is called a terrorist, is equated with someone who, you know, hijacks and crashes a plane and kills 3,000 people. This is the kind of thing that's happening. It's subtle, no, sometimes not so subtle, but it's very dangerous for a democracy. You know, I have a book which is on the table behind called Imagine Democracy, and when I wrote that book, which is, I guess, about 4 years ago, I wrote it because I was saying that our democracy is too limited and we have to expand it. I never imagined that for the 2 or 3 years after I wrote that book, I would be spending so much time defending the most basic rights of a democracy, what we call our fundamental freedoms. But that's what we're required to do now. And I think that the June 15th trials next, or June 12th, I guess, or 13th, are very important to do that. You know, I had another experience in Quebec City, very similar to what's happening to John, in terms of how Jaggi Singh was vilified. Jaggi Singh was arrested before the violence started in Quebec City. He was arrested on a side street. He was charged with possession of a dangerous weapon, which is really would be a joke if it wasn't, if he didn't spend so long in jail, which was a catapult that I was actually involved in helping to finance. It was a catapult that threw teddy bears at the police. This was a group in Edmonton that thought of this. It was kind of a guerrilla theater action, and they actually did pull it off. They threw the teddy bears at the police. Jaggi Singh had nothing to do with it, absolutely nothing to do with it. He didn't even know about it until it arrived there, and it was like a real old-fashioned catapult. And they charged him with possession of a dangerous weapon because that was the most serious charge they could think of, and the dangerous weapon being the catapult. Now, I was still working for the CBC at the time. I had organized the financing for this thing because it was really a nice catapult. You know, it was made out of rough hewn wood and everything, and it worked. Kind of worked. So I kept it a secret because, you know, the CBC didn't like me doing stuff like that. So I wasn't open about the fact that I had done this. And when Jaggi got arrested, we all thought this was really funny at first. And we didn't think it was funny he got arrested. We thought it was funny that they had charged him with this. And that, of course, first of all, the catapult wasn't a weapon. It was a prop, a theater prop. And second of all, he had nothing to do with it. And we just thought, oh, it'll just be dropped. It's silly. But in fact, it wasn't dropped. And not only wasn't it dropped, finally, I decided to testify because it had gotten so serious. He'd already been in jail, I think it was 7 days at this point. I flew up to Quebec City. I testified that it was a theater prop. It wasn't a weapon. You couldn't even use it as a weapon if you wanted to. And finally, the Jaggi Singh had absolutely nothing to do about it. He didn't even know about it. I testified to all of that. The judge didn't question me. Nobody arrested me for possession of a dangerous weapon. And they nevertheless didn't let him out of jail. They kept him in jail because they didn't like the fact that he had organized this demonstration that turned violent. It's not illegal to organize a demonstration that turns violent. It's not. There's no law against that. But because Jaggi Singh is a radical and a leader who organizes militant actions just like John, they want to use the law, the criminal law, illegally, in my view, illegally against them. And this is very, very serious. You know, the last time this happened in our country was under Du Plessis. That's the last time the criminal law was used against organizers. And so I think it's important that everyone here be aware of that. But there's something more, and that is the militarization of globalization that's happening. And, you know, I want to take this to a world level now. And this now we have what happened on September 11th as an excuse. So, and it's important to remember that the criminalization of dissent happened before September 11th. This was happening before September 11th. It's not because of September 11th that it happened. But after September 11th, which was a terrible tragedy, the United States government has used that tragedy to basically openly impose its military might on the rest of the world. And now we're facing a war with Iraq. Excuse me. You know, Saddam Hussein is a dictator. And, you know, nobody, I certainly have no sympathy for him, but I have a lot of sympathy for the Iraqi people who have suffered terribly in the last 12 years since the Gulf War, who have suffered, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have died, who have gone from a society with a relatively good standard of living to a catastrophically low standard of living, where 1 out of 5 children die before they're 5 years old. And where the United States has blocked every kind of humanitarian aid, and no matter what happens, is going to attack Iraq. You know, there's political wrangling going on. Now, here again, there's beginning to be, thank goodness, in the United States, an anti-war movement, which was intimidated. There wasn't a period of intimidation after September 11th in the United States. It was a big setback for the movement. But now an anti-war movement is emerging, and it's emerging in Canada. There were demonstrations in November. And I talk about this now because I think that that it's linked. The militarization on a global level and the use of military force, not just economic blackmail, which has been used for a long time to try and get poor countries to do what the rich countries wanted, but rather open military force now is being used in a way that we haven't seen in a long time. The other thing that's happening is, and here I want to talk about Concordia and my own experience there, is a kind of cheapening of our rights, so that at Concordia, we had this demonstration against Netanyahu that where a few windows were broken. So the, and we can talk about that if you want to, about what happened there, which hasn't, which has been reported in a very distorted way in the media. So the Concordia administration brought a moratorium on discussion of the Middle East for a period of time. Now, you know, okay, you can understand it maybe if tensions were high that they had a moratorium for a couple of weeks. But it went on and on. And the student union, in trying in a very responsible way to negotiate an end to that moratorium, had Hillel, which is the Jewish group, and the SPHR, I think it's called, which is the Arab student group, offered to co-sponsor a meeting to break the moratorium. The administration said yes. The Senate said yes, which is the staff and the faculty. And the Board of Governors turned it down. Now, who is the Board of Governors? Is mostly corporate people worried about donations to the university. Okay? So here we see the impact of the right-wing agenda, in this case privatization, the university relying much more on private funding, creating a situation where there's a limiting of freedom of speech on campus. That's why they invited Sven Robinson and Libby Davis and I to come and speak on the campus, because they figured, well, they're not going to put a member of parliament in jail for speaking on the campus. Wrong. The university actually went and got an injunction against a meeting of two members of parliament. I mean, it's unimaginable when you think about it, as elected representatives to speak on a university campus. The university goes to court, lies to the court. The university told the court that there would certainly be violence if this meeting took place. Not maybe would be violent, perhaps would be violent. Certainly was the word they used. There was had never been a threat to the meeting. There was no indication there would be violence. No one had threatened the meeting. No one had asked the meeting to be shut down. And the university walks into a court, tells the judge with no evidence that there will be violence, and the judge grants an injunction. Just like the judge in Jaggi's case kept him in jail despite all the evidence to the contrary. And so we begin to see, I wouldn't call it a conspiracy, I might get arrested for going to the court, but we begin to see how the judiciary cooperates in this case with the prosecution, even when there's no legal basis at all for it. Well, I mean, all's well that ends well. We had the meeting outside. We didn't break the injunction. We had the meeting on the sidewalk. There were 700 people there. If we had the meeting inside and they hadn't brought the injunction, there'd probably have been 150 people. So it worked out well for us. But in the end, 2 days later, they lifted the injunction. And so there was a victory. But what was important there was that people with stature in the society, particularly the MPs, stood with the student radicals to challenge this repression. And this is the point, I guess, that I want to bring to you tonight, is that we are under serious threat to our civil rights in this right-wing Ontario and right-wing world, for that matter. It's not only, as we know, a question of the poverty that people face, of the suffering that people face. It's also that the ability to organize against that, which is essential. You know, any progress I've ever seen towards social justice has come from organizing, from fighting back. And in all of those struggles, there's always a group that's pushing the edge, you know, that's pushing the edge. There's a group that will be groups that are more moderate and groups that are more radical. And you need that whole spectrum of political struggle for social change to happen. That's the only way it ever happens. And if those more moderate people, if you want, if those people with standing in society don't stand up against the attacks, which always begin on the more radical people, but continue, we will lose our democratic rights. And, you know, I never really believed I'd have to argue that. because I didn't see it. I've never seen it before in my life. Even in the 60s, we didn't face that kind of repression that we're facing now. And so I guess my message tonight is the importance of defending OCAP, of supporting OCAP in this trial, of supporting your local Ontario Common Front group, of speaking out against this firing, which I think is really, really scandalous, and of having your voices be heard, even if, you know, it creates some discomfort. And, you know, I don't know the details of the situation. I'm taking from what, I always forget everybody's name, the woman who spoke before me, Nicole said. But I think that it's important that all of us who believe in social justice, we can debate our differences. You know, John and I don't always agree. We've debated many times. And that's what democracy is about, is struggling and debating and airing our differences. And in Toronto, I just want to say we're initiating something called the Toronto Social Forum, where what we want to do is create more space for discussion and dissent, more space for action, create a notion that we are one movement, from the radical end of the movement to the agencies who are trying to provide services on the ground. We're one movement for social justice. We have differences, we believe in different tactics, we might have different views on things, but in the end, we're against this neoconservative agenda, we're against this attack on democracy. We believe in social justice and democracy. And it's a struggle that we're in together. We have to support each other in that struggle, and most of all, we have to support those who are most vulnerable and those who are most under attack. Thank you.